depression.
You are listening to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, a monthly show about books and writing in Brighton and beyond. It's our summer read special, and we have a jam-packed episode for you this month, full of fabulous book recommendations, author interviews, and news about Brighton's very own book festival at the end of June. We also have the pleasure of speaking to the author of this month's book club book, Dolan Perkins-Valdez, about her spellbinding novel, Take My Hand. Now, you may remember Carolyn Bain and the Ifrori Bookshop from our show in December, where Carolyn gave us some wonderful recommendations of what to read over Christmas. I'm really delighted to have Carolyn back on the show to talk about the first Brighton Book Festival. Welcome back, Carolyn.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
How has it been going at Ifrori Book since we last spoke?
Oh, yeah, it's been going really well, actually. Yes. Exciting. It's lovely to be in the bookshop and meeting lots of new people. It's nice that the sun's out. Just lots of exciting things happening in the bookshop. So we're kind of in our groove a little bit more. And we've got lots of book clubs and author visits. And I think Monday, once a month on a Monday, we run a supper club where we have dinner with an author. So this Monday we're having dinner with Selina Godden, who wrote Mrs. Deaf, yeah, which is, it's lovely, yeah. So yeah, lots of exciting and fun things happening.
So you are the co-founder, along with Ruth Wainwright from the Feminist Bookshop, of the Brighton Book Festival, which will run this year, the last weekend of June. Where did the idea come from?
Like most of my ideas, frustration. I actually thought, oh, we really should get involved with Brighton Book Festival. And then I couldn't find it because it didn't exist. And I just thought that was really weird. It just didn't make sense to me. This city didn't have a book festival. There are so many amazing authors who live here or live in East Sussex. It seemed bizarre to me. So I thought, if there isn't one, let's make one. And this is a funny story, but actually, I was in this really cool meeting, which had nothing to do with book festivals at all, and with all these amazing women who were in the publishing industry. And everyone was going around the table and saying, my name is, and this is what I do. And I was so blown away by all the amazing things that people did. And I was last to say, what did I do? And I thought, I can't just say I run a bookshop. It doesn't sound, enough in the presence of these women. And so when it got to me, I said, I'm Carolyn Bain and I run Ifrori Books, and I'm starting Brighton Book Festival. Just like came out. And their response was amazing. They were like, that is a brilliant idea. Why hasn't there been one? What can we do to help? And so actually all of those women joined the core team to set up Brighton Book Festival. I went back to them all and said, hey, I'm going to do this. Do you want to help? And they said, yes. A couple have dropped out because of capacity. But yeah, I think that their enthusiasm and Ruth's, when I went to Ruth and said, hi, do you think we should put on Brighton Book Festival? She was just like, absolutely. She didn't even hesitate. So, their enthusiasm is really the drive behind this coming together.
You have got some incredible people appearing at Brighton Book Festival. Can you talk a bit about the lineup? I'm so excited about this, by the way. It's been blocked in my diary for weeks.
Yeah, so many. So I would start with our author in residence is Dorothy Coombson, which is just like the coup. We are massive Dorothy fans, and she is passionate about this city. And so it just makes sense to have her and have her be kind of the core of what we're doing. Who else? Gosh, so many. We have, Governor B. So Governor B is 3-time MOBO award winner. And he is on a panel which is talking about men and masculinity. He has a book which is about toxic masculinity. And he's, along with him, we have Amen Alonge. We have Shannon Smart, who, just talk a little bit about Shannon, because Shannon has a book called Which is Steeped in Gold, which is it's one of the most beautiful book covers you've seen this year, easily, hands down. And it's a YA book. And we have linked Shannon up with Deviate, which is an organisation that looks after marginalised young people and helps them stay in education. And we have given them Shannon's book and asked their young people to write soundtracks to Shannon's book. And then Shannon will be coming along to read excerpts from her book to these brand new pieces of music that these young people have composed. And talk about her book and talk about herself. And yeah, I'm really excited about that. We have Yvonne Bailey-Smith. For those who are like, who? I mean, if you don't know who Yvonne Bailey-Smith is, come on, people. That's like a big, yeah. Saba Khan, Juno Dawson. We have writers from New Writing South. We have Sheena Patel, Hannah Vincent. I'm literally scrolling through this list and going, I can't say all of them. Leroy Logan, Dean Atter, Tanya Byrne. Yeah, it goes on and on and on.
Oh my gosh, so many names you've mentioned there. I'm like, yes. Love Yvonne Bailey-Smith. I love Tanya Byrne. We did Heartburn on the book club recently. And oh my gosh, I don't think I've cried as much at a book in years.
Yep. I look at this list and think, really, have we? I have to keep checking it and thinking, I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
That we asked people and they were just like, absolutely. And you know, one person actually wrote back, one author, I won't say who, but we contacted them and said, hi, would you like to be a part of Brighton Book Festival? And they were like, yeah, I love Brighton Book Festival. I'm like, okay. And I don't know if they just sent a standard response or if they genuinely thought, surely Brighton's always had a book festival, you know. Really excited. And I look around some of the other book festivals that are going on. They haven't got this kind of roster of names. So, yeah, I mean, Brighton it's an attractive city for creatives. And so it makes sense to me that people are just like, yeah, I'd love to be involved because they know the potential that Brighton has. It's a young, vibrant city. And actually what we will create, what we have created is a young festival. It's not a festival, sorry, no offense to, you know, old middle-aged people who, old and middle-aged, you know what I mean. But it's not that kind of festival. It's intentionally not called Brighton Literary Festival because we wanted to create a festival that was accessible to the people of this city. So ticket prices, where at each event where we've had funding particularly, ticket prices are really low. So our family festival, which is happening on the Saturday morning, we really, really wanted to make it accessible to children and families. And so the early bird ticket prices are £3, which, yeah, I mean, if we could give the tickets away, we would absolutely give them away. And in all honesty, the £3, we hope, will be, you know, less than the value of the goodie bag that families will leave with. So, you know, wherever we can, we want it to be accessible to all people, to all kinds of people from across the city, the plethora of people that this city holds.
It sounds absolutely amazing, Carolyn. How can anyone listening find out more, get a ticket and pop it in their diaries?
Brightonbookfestival.co.uk. I would advise, my best advice I can give you is get on the mailing list, because if you're on the mailing list, you're going to get the first information on, there are more authors that were just waiting to come back to us, even bigger names. There are a few surprises in there, but all of that is really going to be revealed through the mailing list first. If you're one of those people who like to be the first to know, I always want to be the first to know, then yeah, get involved, get on the mailing list. And if you're thinking, oh, how could I get involved a bit more in that festival? Then, yeah, drop us an email. There's a contact form on the website. You could drop us an email if you'd like to volunteer or if you have a particular skill set. Or if you'd like to sponsor an event, get involved. And also, there's a place on the website where you can pay it forward. So if you think, hey, I would love to get somebody else a ticket for anything, or, you know, just put some money in the pay it forward kitty. All of that's on the website. So brightonbookfestival.co.uk.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Laura Kay's new book, Tell Me Everything, is out very soon and is set in Brighton. I'm really excited to have Laura Kay joining us on the show. Welcome, Laura. Can you introduce yourself?
Thank you. Yes, I am Laura Kay and I am an author of The Split, which is out in paperback now, and of Tell Me Everything, which is out this week.
Laura, what did you do before you were a published author?
Before I was a published author, I worked as a journalist. I was doing that full time for about 7 years. And then in June last year, I gave up that job. And since then, I've been writing full time.
Your new book, Tell Me Everything, let's talk about it. What is it about and why did you decide to set it in a wonderful city?
So the book is about a therapist called Natasha and her complicated love life, her relationships with her family, and her journey to sort of happiness, really. A case of her following her own advice. And I decided to set it in Brighton because I love Brighton. One of my oldest friends lives in Brighton, has done for sort of the past 12 years. So I spend a lot of time there, and I knew that I wanted to set this book in a heat wave, this sort of like very oppressive, constant backdrop to the book is this heat. And what better place really than Brighton to be going through a heat wave? And a theme throughout is that they're always sort of close to the ocean, and that carries throughout the book. And so, yeah, I thought Brighton would be the perfect spot.
Can you read us some, please?
Yes, of course. I am going to read a bit from where Natasha is just about to teach a sort of like introduction to therapy course, and she's about to bump into someone who's going to become rather important in the book. So, I arrive at the nondescript office building with 20 minutes to spare, enough time for me to drag some plastic chairs into two semicircles, one behind the other, and stick a sign on the door which reads, "Please wait outside until class begins at 2 p.m. Good to enforce boundaries early on. Boundaries are the bedrock of therapy. Also, I don't want to make small talk with all the very keen people who arrive early, but mainly the boundaries thing, very important. I'd hoped the temperamental air conditioning might have kicked in, but if it has, I can't feel it. I try to open the windows, but they're locked shut, a safety measure. I wonder if it's possible to boil alive in an office block. It smells of old carpet and microwave lunches. It's eerily quiet. I decide, since I have a few minutes to myself, to eat the Twix that's been melting in my bag all day and read the news, by which, of course, I mean scroll through Twitter. I have a message from Georgia asking me for the 1,000th time if I'll definitely be home at 7. My stomach flips at the prospect of the evening. How long can packing really take? I've just finished the first stick of my Twix when the door opens. Excuse me, Natasha. I wipe my mouth on the back of my hand and quickly fold the wrapper around the second stick. A woman is standing in the doorway clutching a takeaway coffee cup in one hand and her phone in the other. She's wearing skinny jeans, super tight and black. I don't know how she's coping with the heat. She smiles and makes to step into the room, assuming she's found the correct one. I stand up. There's a waiting area outside. Please go and take a seat and I'll call you all in at 2. There's actually a sign on the door. It comes out much harsher than I intend it to. She stands completely still for a moment. It happens too quickly to be sure, but I could swear I see a flicker of a smile play on her lips just for a second.
You've written before about the importance and power of uplifting LGBT books.
Yes.
Why do you feel that this is a part of the book market that needs to be tackled?
I think, well, when I started writing, I just started writing the books that I wanted to read. And I love reading books by like Marianne Keyes, David Nichols. So they're like, they're uplifting without a doubt, but they also like tackle like difficult issues or, you know, really don't shy away from what people are going through. And I felt like I hadn't read very much that did that in the same way with LGBTQ plus characters. And it isn't that it's not out there, it's just that there isn't very much of it. And it's also not that people aren't writing it, it's just that it's not widely available. And I knew that that's what I wanted to read. So I think it's really important that, you know, queer people can have as much to read and as much variety to read and consume as not queer people. Like, so I love the books that I grew up reading with queer characters. Sarah Waters as like a particular favourite. But it shouldn't just be historical fiction or literary fiction. It's stuff that tackles, you know, coming out or pain or suffering. All of those are really valid and important stories to tell. And I love books that tackle those issues, but it should, there should be like a breadth of stuff, you know, as the same as everyone else has got.
Yeah. So you write so beautifully, Laura, full stop, but also Tell Me Everything, about friendship. The friendships between your characters, platonic friendships, are so central to your books. Is that something as well that you do consciously?
Yeah, I really love writing relationships in general, and not just romantic relationships. And I think that friendships can be so romantic in their own way. And I just love those really subtle moments between friends that, you know, say 1,000 words with just like a little inside joke or a look or whatever. And I think those, capturing those moments is really special. I think in this book especially, Natasha is anchored by two people, and one is her sister, and they have this like incredibly close relationship, and one is her friend Charlie. And I think these are the people that they, even when she's going through turmoil as a reader, you know that she'll be okay because she has these like incredibly close relationships that aren't romantic, that are, you know, unconditional.
Absolutely. Why did you decide to make Natasha a therapist?
I am fascinated by the idea that therapists have this complete other life that goes on when you're not in the room with them for, you know, the 50 minutes that you're with them. And they are so often like a blank slate, really. And I know from experience, I'm friends with people that are therapists, you know, that they've got this whole other world going on, and like really like messy stuff going on with their love lives, and like, you know, definitely not having everything together. And I just thought that was a really interesting dynamic to explore. And the fact that she's great at her job and she's professionally excellent, but is barely holding it together herself.
Yeah, no, it's really, really great. It's such a good juxtaposition. Laura, what are you reading this summer?
So I have just finished a book called Sundial by Catriona Ward, which was horrible in a great way. I loved that. And then there are a couple of books coming out this summer that I really, really loved. Just By Looking at Him by Ryan O'Connell, which is just one of the funniest books I've ever read, maybe, which is a really, really great book about a queer couple living in Los Angeles and their life. And there's a book called Double Booked by Lily Linden, which is coming out in June, which is a sort of fun bi rom-com, which I really enjoyed. Yeah, there's lots of good queer stuff coming out.
Fabulous. Laura, when you're in Brighton, what do you like to do?
I like to sit on the beach with an ice cream from Boho Gelato and avoid the seagulls as best I possibly can. I love to walk along the front to Hove. The last time I was in Brighton, I went to Plateau and drank lots of wine and ate lots of amazing things, potter around the lanes, just
lovely
take
stuff.
It all in. Yeah,
because there's this lovely rite of passage that kind of goes on in Tell Me Everything, where Natasha takes her niece and nephew to the arcades for fish and chips and for ice cream on the beach, and it was just such a Brighton moment. It made me feel very happy and very nostalgic. Laura, what are you working on next?
So I'm not really, I don't really know if I'm allowed to talk about it that much, but I think I've made it pretty clear from other things. I'm working on a third book, which is really exciting. So that's taken up all my time at the moment.
How can we find and follow you and buy a copy of your books?
So I am on Instagram at Laura E. K. I'm on Twitter at Laura Eliza K. And you can buy Tell Me Everything at all good bookshops. And you can pre-order it now everywhere.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
4 years ago, I decided to start a writing group in Brighton called the West Hill Writers. I didn't have any idea at the time that 4 years later, we would still be running, we'd still be doing two courses a year, and we would have a group of wonderful writers who have been together, some for less time, some for more time, who have really supported each other through lockdown, and who have now clubbed together to create a beautiful anthology called Brighton and Beyond, a West Hill Writers Anthology. I worked very closely with one of our most recent students, J.E. Suick, who recently moved to Brighton and was looking for a group of like-minded people. I'm really excited to bring J.E. on to do a much better job than me to talk about putting together this anthology. So J.E., welcome to the Brighton Book Club. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, Anna and listeners. You can probably tell I grew up in the States. I'm a Korean-American married to a Brit. I'm also a midlife career changer. I used to be an English teacher and a freelance editor, and I recently transitioned into production editing. Plus, I'm pursuing a part-time master's in creative writing at Cambridge. So I hope it's not too lame to say that West Hill Writers has actually just meant everything to me in terms of living in Brighton. My husband and I moved to England just before the pandemic. Amazing timing. So 2020 was solitary and pure stress. And then I met you, Anna, online through the wonderful Jericho Writers. And then you invited me to join West Hill Writers in January 2021. And Anna, seriously, that changed everything for me in terms of being here in England and in Brighton. And there's just something about the way that you run the group that you have such different people who might otherwise never meet, and we just become instant community. And it's pretty incredible. The anthology was a project that started before I joined. And I gotta say, for any writing group out there who wants to put out an anthology, it is a lot. We got really lucky because within our group, we have like professional writers and editors and even PR amongst us. And most essentially you, Anna, with your experience within the publishing industry, just how to physically put a book together logistically. Certainly nothing that I knew how to do before this project, despite my editing experience. Let's see. So from the start, how this all came to be, at least from when I came on the scene, we had a group member, Kristen, who partnered us all up for small group feedback, which was so essential. And she really lit a fire under all of us in terms of scheduling. And then we had volunteers for our editing team, Pippa, Jane, Joe, and myself, and later on Kate. And all of us did one-on-one editing work with all of our writers. We created a style guide with the production team. I went through a whole bunch of additional rounds of proofreading for everything, and then totally geeked out on production with you and Ellie Wilson. We were so lucky to have Ellie, who does professional typesetting. I mean, this is something that you could not do on anybody's home laptop at all. And we spent ages obsessing over all those little details that make a book a book, from the fonts and spacing and layouts and all the tiny little choices of symbols and drop caps. And just Ellie made it look so beautiful and professional. And God, I don't think anybody really anticipated how much work this would all be.
J.E., I'd love to hear one of your poems from the anthology and maybe give us a bit of context.
Oh, sure. So West Hill Writers introduced me to H., who has become one of my dearest friends, and also to me and my husband. And she also became my poetry mentor, because I started writing poetry kind of for the first time in my adult life in many, many years. And these two poems that have been included in this anthology are two sides of me being an East Asian living in the West, having grown up in the US, and now living in England. I love Brighton. I mean, I'd never been here before moving here, and my husband and I chose it because it's like everything we are and want to be part of. Brighton's artistic and craftsy and musical and queer and eco-friendly and just beautiful. And I got here right before the pandemic, when anti-AAPI sentiment and hate crimes were on the rise in the US and here in the UK. And even though I've experienced lots of racism in my life, I surprisingly experienced a ton of it aggressively and in high concentration in this most progressive corner of England. So this first poem called Little Doubt is based on some of my first months living here. Little Doubt. I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I like to smile. I like to try. No violence without, just a little inside. Maybe it's me. They tell me to give people the benefit of the doubt. Welcome to England, all light on, bright on, progressive and green. What you shine to the world is what you receive, my queen. Don't let the negative manifest. That's the secret. Believe. For can I truly spy what's inside? The brown man lunging at away from me, ere lockdown start, willing me, the soul masked, his little shop to depart. How can I hate you? Now what do you want? Little white woman hisses, disgusting. As I smiling walked round helpful wide radius, polite masked nod, cherry on top. Another brown shopkeeper singing song, singing little ching chong chingings at my back. I turn hard smiling, lobbing perfect English back. The thought to my sisters, who perfect English lack. Another old white woman wants little dog stroked by British husband, but not by me. Dogs are lovely, are they not? Suckling little pack of three, calling me coronavirus as if reciting ABCs. Ain't no big deal, I've not yet been shot. Strapping white lads, speedy real threats, but brown stings best. Ring long, ring me dry. One big BAME BIPOC family, neatly conquered, divide by them, the big lie. And while we cannot disguise breasts, black hair, our bones, yellow skin, folded eyes, still I can easily hide and rest the bifold nature of being. Little need to try. Let us ask why. Those who define never need be defined. No required to defend. What are you? No, what are you really? And your parents, where are they from? Categorize or fetishize what sex you enjoy, money you lack, family history and blood. Your slant eyes, you sucky $5 for me? So exotic and inscrutable. That's a compliment, you see. Nothing to be such a shit about. Let's talk about it. Do help us understand, not understand, or take a stand. Why don't you let us talk about it? Identify. It helps to verbalize it out. Yet when the default remains unchallenged, undenied, pre-installed, and only option other, they're interrogated. But why? Isn't the life unexamined not worth living at all? I'd like to give myself the benefit of little doubt.
Oh, thank you so much for reading that, J.E. It's such a powerful poem, and I think really shows a kind of underside of Brighton that is on and anywhere also, especially during the pandemic, that really often isn't spoken about. So thank you so much. So Jay, if anyone's listening here, and I'm going to feel terribly embarrassed and go bright red because you're very generous with what you say about the West Hill group, but I do agree that it is fab, and it's fab because the members of West Hill make the West Hill, and every season, every time we run a new course, we have new people coming in and they are welcomed with open arms. So if you're listening to this, why should you get involved and become a West Hill writer?
Oh my gosh. Well, you will instantly just be enveloped in warmth and also challenged to your fullest. I've had so many pieces of writing come out of little flashes of inspiration from things people have said in group, feedback I've gotten from exercises that Anna's given us, and quickly going back to the anthology. I mean, Anna, you oversaw so many elements of the creation of it all. It was just insane. And I do want to say, just on a personal note, I must have spent a good 250, 300 hours of just love and labor on this project last year. And I could not be there for the absolute final stages of it, which was heartbreaking for me, but absolutely fine, because leaving it in your hands when I got cancer at the beginning of this year, I knew that it would come to fruition, and it did, and it's gorgeous, and I'm so proud of it. And every single person, every single piece in this book, you come away with a really clear spine of a potent concentration of theme and feeling and resonance. And everyone's coming from a completely different place in their lives. We all have different backgrounds. There's so much to entertain you and to grip you in this anthology. You've got lots of perspectives, from queer and class and race to family, friendship, romance, grief. We have all sorts of genres, from scathing satire and dark dystopians and speculative slices of life to realism and fantasy and magical realism and historical fiction. Even you've got prescription dogs, you've got fish, birds, and wolves. There's funny and light, there's heartbreak, and there's so much love, and all of this comes from the different voices that come together at West Hill. And I really hope anybody listening to this who's inspired to write more, who lives in Brighton, gets in touch with Anna, because trust me, it is very, very worthwhile. Basically, I think whatever page you turn to, whatever session you show up to, you get this incredible surge of motivation. And that is something that is, writing's really solitary, and we need to lean on each other sometimes. So I'm so proud to be a member of this group, and I'm so proud to have been part of this anthology.
The Brighton and Beyond, the West Hill Writers Anthology, is out on June the 9th and can be ordered from all good bookshops. It's in stock at City Books and The Feminist Bookshop. You can order it online at westhillwriters.carrd.co, and you can email write@westhill@gmail.com to join the newsletter to hear about the next 10-week course, which will run from mid-October to mid-December. Thank you so much, JE, for joining us.
Thank you, Anna.
Bookseller, publicist, and friend of the show, Caitlin Gleason, joins us to talk about the 5 books that everybody will be, or already is, talking about this summer. Caitlin, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to be back on.
Let's talk books.
Yes. So I've picked 5, and some of them I need a hardback, and some of them are new release paperback. And a couple of them might be a bit overlooked, but I just think these are the absolute best reads that you need to get your hands on for summer. So first up, we've got a brand new book for Lara Williams. Now, you might remember she wrote The Supper Club, which was hugely successful, very well loved. She's brought out a new one called The Odyssey. It's got an amazing blue cover with a pink flamingo pool ring. It screams summer. And it's all about her character, Ingrid, who works on a cruise liner. Ingrid spends her weekends getting drunk at local bars, traveling all around the world on a cruise ship. And while it's not a bad life, there's kind of a dark underbelly where she gets embroiled with the ship's captain. So it's very much a poolside themed read that leads into a little bit of a darker story. So I think this one from Lara Williams is going to be a massive hit for summer.
That sounds great. We loved Supper Club. We did it as our book club book, oh my gosh, maybe 2 years ago now. And fabulous. I love her way of really bringing out the kind of deep, dark parts of people's personalities.
Yeah, and I definitely think the Odyssey will be no different. I think, as I say, surface level, cruise liner, party summer read, lower level, very dark emotions. So the next one is might be one that be a bit overlooked. It's called How to Kidnap the Rich by Rahul Rayner. Now, this one's just come out into paperback and it's set in Delhi. And the main character, Ramesh, starts making a really lucrative living for himself, taking tests for the sons of India's elite. But by doing this, he kind of gets into this very risky situation full of blackmail and kidnapping, and is all through the like layers of India's underbelly and all of its complexity and like beauty and squalor. And it goes all the ways from like the bottom rungs of the social to all the ways to the top. And I just think it's, if you're a fan of like pacey crime thrillers set in different country, this is going to be like the best read for you for the summer.
This sounds amazing. Why haven't I heard of it before?
This is the thing. A lot of people haven't heard of it, but I think it's one of those ones that, because it didn't hit mainstream in the hardback, it's kind of slipped under the radar, which is why I wanted to bring it back, because it's got a great cover. And I just think it's going to appeal to so many people. Like if you don't know what to get your best mate who's not a reader, if you want to take a book on holiday that you're not sure if you're going to like, I think this will be the one to pack.
Amazing.
So the next one is People Person by Candice Carty-Williams. Now, I didn't read Queenie, but I did listen to her podcast with Elizabeth Day. She did a How to Fail with Elizabeth Day about her new book, People Person, which I would highly recommend. So this one is new in hardback this month, and it's all about her main character, Dimple. And Dimple is kind of, she's 30, her life isn't really going anywhere. She's an aspiring lifestyle influencer, but she's got a crap boyfriend, and she just wants to expand her life beyond the size of her phone screen. But to complicate everything, she has multiple siblings, all half siblings, all with the same father. And throughout the course of the book, the kind of events that happen with her father bring all of her siblings together and expand her life out of this kind of influencer mode that she's stuck in. But if you liked Queenie, I would definitely get on this one for the summer, because it's brand new. It's the same compelling, well-written storyline, but with a completely different cast of characters and themes. So I think this one in particular, based off of how well Queenie did, is going to be a massive hit for summer.
It's funny publishing, isn't it? Because I loved Queenie, and oh my gosh, anyone listening will, I'm sure, remember seeing Queenie everywhere. Yeah. I haven't seen anything about People Person.
This is the thing. I think it's funny. Queenie was such a smash hit, and they did the like a gold cover and a pink cover. And then People Person has really just been so under the radar that I myself didn't know it was coming out until it hit the shelves. So I think picking up for a second book can be really difficult, but because Candice is so skilled at what she does, I think the more people word of mouth get into it, it'll just be a smash hit.
Amazing. I'm looking forward to this one.
So the fourth one is Double Blind by Edward St. Aubyn. This is another one that kind of slipped under the radar in hardback, but it's just come out in paperback and has had a whole new audience because it has a really summery cover. It's got this really athletic guy swimming in like a nice, tranquil, turquoise colored pool. So exactly what you'd expect your summer read to look like. And it's all about these three main characters who really become embroiled with each other's love lives. One's returned from New York. The other is a like committed naturalist who's living off grid. And then it's just all about their kind of dramatic involvement with each other and getting into each other's orbit, and how none of them are just ever going to be the same again after meeting. It's really difficult to describe without giving a spoiler, so I'm trying to work around that. But if you enjoyed Paradise by Edna O'Brien or Conversations with Friends, I think this will be a really good one for you because it's kind of that more sleek, slow burning trio drama.
Wonderful. By the same guy that wrote Patrick Melrose, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's the same guy. So anyone who's read the Patrick Melrose, it is quite different because they were sort of semi-autobiography fiction. And this one is just like a whole separate story. And yeah, I think pretty much, I mean, we all say don't judge a book by its cover, but the cover of this one definitely screams summer poolside read. And then the fifth one we've got is also new to paperback. This is Other People's Clothes by Calla Henkel. Now, this one is, if you enjoyed My Year of Rest and Relaxation, this book is for you. It's two art students arriving in New York, and they rent this fabulous apartment, and they're obsessed with like Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears. And I might point out it's set in 2009. They're not just like weirdly regressive. And they rent this magnificent apartment, but they begin to feel like the woman they rented it from is watching them, and that maybe she is kind of using their life to exploit them and base a novel on them so that she herself can churn out like a new dramatic thriller book. And so the girls, as a result, start hosting these like wild parties that progressively get more and more out of hand. And so ultimately, they're not able to control the narrative. And it is a fantastic thriller that I think is going to appeal to so many people. And because it's new in paperback, again, they've changed the cover from the hardback, so it looks totally different. So I think that will help pick it up for the paperback, but definitely one to recommend if you want like a pacey dramatic thriller, or if you enjoyed My Year of Rest and Relaxation.
It's so funny, isn't it, how the comparisons we make, because this is the only book that I've read on your wonderful list, Caitlin. I can highly recommend it. But there's so much more going on than A Year of Rest and Relaxation. But I see exactly what you mean. It's got that super kind of a Tessa Mushbeg, like kind of complacent vibe in the, in the characters.
Yeah. And I think also it goes into like really commentating on the underlying issues that we have with capitalism, and just the idea that you're always being watched, I think is, you know, the themes that while they're not the same, they definitely parallel each other and match with each other. But as you say, it's definitely more of like there's much more going on. So that is my summer reads list. And they are all, I think, excellent picks for summer. But I mean, by all means, people can read them and decide for themselves.
And they can pop in and see you at City Books in Brighton.
Absolutely.
Get their hands on a copy. You are doing something new and exciting, Caitlin. Tell us about Lit is Queer.
I am. So I have started a Brighton-based book group in the real to meet up once a month called Lit is Queer. And it's all about queer literature and reading works by LGBTQIA plus authors and non-binary authors. And it's a safe, inclusive space for anyone who wants to talk all things queer literature. We're going to meet once a month and talk about books throughout the month on all the social media channels, which are all Lit is Queer on both Twitter and Instagram. I'll be posting companion reads for you to do some companion reading with our book of the month, as well as talking about our book of the month. And then we'll also go into podcast recommendations for each author that we're focusing on, and like tips on if you find reading difficult, or what to read if you like the book of the month, what else you could possibly read. So it's really all about just getting people to come together to explore queer literature in Brighton.
Thank you so much, Caitlin. Have a wonderful summer.
Thank you. You too.
Our book club book this month is Take My Hand by Dylan Perkins Valdez. This is a beautifully written, moving, sad and profound story based on real life events. It follows Sybil Townsend as she tries to make a change to the devastating reproductive laws in 1970s Alabama. I'm so excited to be joined by the author. Welcome to the Brighton Book Club.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's talk about Take My Hand. This was based on a real life case. Can you talk about that?
Yes, it's inspired by a case filed in 1973 on behalf of two little girls and their family after the girls had been sterilized without their family's consent. Their names were Mary Alice and Minnie Lee Ralph. They lived in Montgomery, Alabama. At the time, they were 12 and 14 years old.
This is a devastating case and one that I am ashamed not to have known about. When did you come across this? And can you talk a bit to the research process and how you kind of gave light to a situation that really happened through fiction?
Sure. Well, I'd been hearing about this case my entire life, really, because my dad went to college in Alabama at Tuskegee University. And I learned about the Tuskegee syphilis experiment very early. And then in my teenage years, I learned about the sterilizations that had happened in Alabama. but I didn't know very much about the case. I just knew it sort of in passing. And it was about 7 years ago that I started to research and dive a little bit deeper to find out what exactly happened to those girls. And at first, I didn't know if it would be a book. I was just curious and seeing what happened. But pretty soon, I realized that I needed to write about this because I wanted more people to know about it. I thought that this was a chapter in America's past that too many people just didn't know about. And I began to think about it as a book, and I began to think about whose story I was going to tell. Was I going to tell the girl's story? Was I going to tell the story of the lawyer? But eventually I settled on, I really wanted to know what it was like to be a nurse at that clinic at that time and have something like this happen under your watch.
Absolutely. And the nurse and the narrator and protagonist of this book, Sybil Townsend, is an amazing character who you cannot help rooting for. When did Sybil come to you and what was it like to write her?
Well, I'll tell you, Sybil came to me fully formed, which is a gift for a writer. You know, she appeared to me as I began to write the book, and she was sort of in my ear. She was saying, this is what happened, this is how I felt, this is what I want you to say in your book. So she really appeared to me fully formed. Now, there were some details about her that came along as I revised the manuscript, but in many ways she may have been the easiest character I've ever written because she was just so palpable to me as I went through this process. Now, other characters in the book, you know, took a lot more work, but Sybil was a powerful figment in my imagination.
She is an incredible character and so different in kind of personality and the atmosphere and her background to the Williams family. What was it like to write these really contrasting narratives?
I knew when I first started the book that they would be from different sides of the track, so to speak, because Sybil has recently graduated college. She is the daughter of a physician. Her mother is an artist. For graduation, her father bought her a new car. And the Williams family, on the other hand, live in a shanty on the back of a man's property. They are living in abject poverty. When she meets the girls, they're not even enrolled in school. So I wanted to know what would happen when these two families encounter one another. And what does it look like to have a relationship, a friendship with a family who lives so differently than Sybil?
Please, can you read us an extract?
Sure. I'm going to read from the moment that Sybil meets the girls for the first time. When I drove up, at first I assumed that the Williams sisters lived in the neat brick Rambler with the two pickup trucks parked out front. A thick cloud of dust swirled around my mama's little car, and when it cleared, I spied two little white boys standing on the house porch. I rolled my window all the way down, hoping they'd see my uniform. "I'm looking for the Williams family." I was positive I had read the number on the mailbox correctly. One of them pointed behind the house and I understood. I wound the car around the pickups, following the scant outline of tire tracks. The Pinto pushed through the ruts, bouncing so hard I was afraid I'd hit my head on the roof. I prayed I wouldn't get stuck. The last thing I wanted was to have to walk back down to that house and ask those boys to go get their daddy. Fortunately, it hadn't rained in a while and the ground was dry. The trees cleared and the land swelled up into a hill. At the top sat a cabin. The car sputtered and I tapped the gas pedal, somehow making it to the top. Everything leveled out and the tire tracks disappeared into brush. Off to my left, I could see a wide field of green stalks. I didn't know a thing about farming, but anybody with eyes could tell that was wheat growing out there. Cows grazed in a lot beside the barn. A lone chicken peeked at me as it stepped through knee-high grass. Up close, the structure was more of a wooden shanty than a cabin, and it looked tired, as though a wind had blown it askew and it hadn't had the energy to right itself. A skinny black dog scratched its back in the dirt. I got out of the car and stepped into a huddle of gnats. The air smelled of burning wood. Something told me these girls couldn't be in school. If they were, they didn't go every day. They should have been expecting me, but they didn't have a phone, and I wasn't confident they even knew about our appointment. A girl wearing grubby pants and an orange t-shirt shaded her eyes with a hand. The backlight of the sun darkened her face. How you doing? I'm Sybil Townsend from the Family Planning Clinic. It didn't make sense for us to be out here in our uniforms, but Miss Seeger insisted. It was March, chilly, and I had left my sweater in the car. The wind reached my neck. I stepped up closer. Someone had tried to braid the girl's hair, but the roots were so matted with dirt that only the ends of the hair could be plaited. I clutched the file under my arm and tried to remember what I'd read. Are you India? The dog rubbed against my leg, and I fought an urge to push the animal off. It sidled away. I looked down, and sure enough, it had left a brown mark on my white pantyhose. She don't talk. I jumped. I hadn't seen the other girl standing inside the screen door. I remembered the contents of the file. The younger sister was mute. I had skimmed that detail, but it came back to me now. Oh, okay. I'm Sybil Townsend. I'm the nurse sent to give y'all shots today. What happened to the other one? I don't know, I stuttered. The nurse leave taken baffled me too. Maybe the demands of the job had been too much. Maybe she'd found something that paid more. Is your daddy home? No, ma'am. I blinked as I pieced together their story in my head. Mace Williams, father, 33, milk cows, till the land, did whatever the white man told him to do in exchange for this shanty and a pittance of money. Constance Williams, mother, deceased. Patricia Williams, grandmother, 62. In the distance, the inky outline of grazing cows flickered in the light. Your grandmama here? Grandma, the nurse here. I tried to smile, but I wasn't sure if my expression passed for polite. The older sister settled it. I remembered now that her name was Erica. You can come in if you want. She opened the door for me. I'm not sure if I said this before, but walking into that house changed my life. And yes, it changed theirs too. I walked right up in there with my file and bag of medicine ready to save somebody. Little old me, 5'5" of know-it-all.
I absolutely loved that extract. Thank you so much. So the style of the narrative is that Sybil in the future is telling her adoptive daughter this story. Why did you decide to use this as your narrative style?
Well, I always had, throughout the time I was writing the book, I had an older narrator who was reflecting on this moment because I was really curious about how going through something like this would change the course of your life. And so throughout the time that I was writing the book, I had this reflective narrator. And one of my early readers told me, she said, I really like it whenever that older narrator peeks her head up out of the story. Mm-hmm. And eventually I just decided I would pull that narrator out just a little bit more into these intermittent chapters. And one morning I woke up and I wrote that very first chapter, which remains the first chapter. And so really it's just that older Sybil who is, at a transitional moment in her life and reflecting on what happened all those many years ago. And also her daughter is the same age that she was then. And in my mind, her daughter is like the reader, you know, her daughter, she's talking to the reader to tell the reader what happened and how she has grappled with it.
Your previous books, Wench and Balm, tell us what they're about, please.
Sure. My very first novel, Wench, was set in the 1850s, and it was set at a resort where slave owners vacationed each summer, and they would take up their enslaved mistresses, for lack of a better term, to vacation with them. And it was a resort that actually existed. And eventually, when the Civil War came, the resort closed down, but it became the very first African-American college established in the United States. And those early students at the college were the children of these slave owners and their enslaved mistresses. So I was very curious about why women would go there and not try to escape. And so it's about these four women who are taken there each summer by their enslavers. And my second novel is set in the 1860s after the Civil War. It's set in Chicago, and it's about all of these people who were trying to rebuild their lives after the war was over. It features a woman who claims that she can talk to the dead, which was very, very common in the U.S. There were these women mediums who traveled the country talking to the dead because so many people had lost loved ones during the war. And also a Black woman, Madge, who knows how to heal with roots and tonics. And when the two of them come together, the friendship that results from that.
Thank you so much for joining us. Take My Hand is out now and available from all good bookshops. Thank you for listening to the Brighton Book Club. We will be taking a short break over the summer, but we'll be back at the end of July with a new show for you. If you're missing great book and author content, you'll be able to find me over at Global Writing Club Jericho Writers, where I head up their online and offline events programme. Our Summer Festival of Writing is free to members and just £11 a month to join. For this, you can catch up some wonderful writers such as Louise O'Neill, Paula Hawkins, Manjeet Nan, Kathy Wetzenbrink, and the author of our next book club book, Chloe Timms, whose debut novel, Sea Women, is out very soon. Esther has known nothing but Eden's Isle her whole life. After a fire that left her orphaned and badly scarred, Esther was raised by her grandmother in a deeply religious society who cut itself off from the mainland in the name of salvation. Here, fear rules. Fear of damnation, fear of the outside world, and fear of what lurks beneath the water. A corrupting evil the islanders call the Sea Women. But Esther wants more than a life where touching the water risks corruption, where her every move is watched and women are controlled in every aspect of their lives. Married off, the women of the island must conceive a child within her appointed mother year or be marked as cursed and cast into the sea as a sacrifice in an act called untethering. When Esther witnesses a woman untethered, she sees a future to fear. Her fate awaits, a loveless marriage, her mother year declared. And after a brief taste of freedom, the insular world Esther knows begins to unravel. I am so excited to read this book. It sounds absolutely amazing. The Book Club is available as a podcast where you can download from wherever you get yours. You can get in touch with us on Instagram at btmbookclub and email us at btmbookclub@gmail.com. If you're interested in sponsoring an episode, get in touch and we will see you in July.
passion.